This week, we've been hearing about the challenges facing aging jazz musicians, and today we're going to hear about royalties. Reissued records are the bread and butter of the jazz business. There are no new recording costs. The album art is often the same as the original. That means less work and more profits for the record labels. It could also mean royalties for older musicians, if they could collect them. Here's NPR's Felix Contreras.
Jimmy Scott was a star in the years following World War II. In 1950, he had a top 10 R&B hit with Everybody is Somebody's Fool.
Everybody, somebody's fool. The world is the biggest school. As you live, you learn. Though a torch will burn. Everybody's somebody's fool.
Scott has an unmistakable voice, critical acclaim, and the respect of his peers in both jazz and pop music. What the 79-year-old singer says he doesn't have is money.
Everybody makes money with Jimmy Scott.
Specifically, money from record royalties.
If I could just recapture part of the money they told me, great, but you'll never recapture it. Gone, so it's gone.
Even though he was a featured artist, Scott says he never got any royalties for records he made for a variety of small and medium-sized labels in the 1940s and 50s.
Everybody's somebody's fool.
On Everybody is Somebody's Fool, he was just a singer. He got paid a flat fee. 73-year-old tenor saxophonist Frank Foster says he had no idea what kind of contract he signed in 1955. That's when the Count Basie Band recorded one of his tunes that would become a jazz standard, Shiny Stockings. Most jazz composers in the 1940s and 50s didn't know they could get paid every time one of their tunes was recorded, or, says Frank Foster, that they could own the rights to the song by publishing it.
I didn't start publishing until, it was shortly after 1960. Up until that time, I had written most of the songs that were going to bring me the most royalties, like Shiny Stockings and Back to the Apple and things like that I wrote for Basie. But all those songs I didn't own. And I must say, Felix, that at that time, I had nothing on my mind but getting next to somebody's daughter.
In the early 1940s, jazz was recorded mostly on small, independent labels for producers and label owners who heard both an artistic and commercial potential in the music. Musicians frequently tell stories of label owners who would pay the band leaders in advance, only to maintain later that their records never sold enough to cover the advance, much less provide royalties. 60 years later, some musicians trying to untangle bad business deals or unkept promises turn to Dean Pratt. He's a one-man record royalty collection agency. Pratt tracks down payments owed to musicians or their heirs. If he's unsuccessful, he doesn't get his 15% fee. Pratt says the labels that can find original contracts insist on sticking to them, even if, Pratt says, they're unfair to musicians.
I consider it mistreatment. Some of the labels might say, well, this is what it is. I mean, they signed this agreement, and this is what we're obligated to pay them contractually, and that's what we're going to pay them.
Consider the best-selling jazz record of all time, Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. The record featured two pianists. One of them was Wynton Kelly. Again, Dean Pratt.
Look at Wynton Kelly, one of our greatest artists, and he just died penniless. And I thought to myself, how can that be?
It's a common tale in jazz. Sidemen were paid a flat fee for each session, no royalties. When royalty agreements were offered, they went to the leaders on the sessions. A common royalty rate was 1 to 4% of retail sales. In 1992, the royalty landscape was shaken up when EMI, one of the four largest record labels, updated its royalty policy. It increased rates for all musicians who recorded for EMI-owned labels prior to 1970 to 10%, a contemporary standard. EMI's holdings include the venerable Blue Note Records. Tom Everett is a senior vice president at EMI who oversees Blue Note. He says that while reissues can be a steady source of income for labels, they don't always bring in a lot of money.
Thelonious Monk, Art Blakey, Grant Green, Herbie Hancock, and then there are some artists who I won't mention who, even though they're geniuses and the records are incredible, just don't sell well.
Musician's accountant Dean Pratt says even a small royalty for an elderly jazz musician can mean a lot.
$5,000 to an older jazz artist is a windfall for them. And for most of the companies, it's something they can't even see. It's like a little speck on the piece of paper.
Pratt says Blue Note is one of the good guys, and one of the label's artists did get a windfall. Yette Hipp was an obscure German pianist who made a couple of recordings for Blue Note in the 1950s. In 2001, a secretary at Blue Note Records met the pianist who asked whether she had any royalty payments coming. EMI Vice President Tom Everett ordered a search of the books just to see what he could find.
Sure enough, I believe there was an excess of $40,000 in an escrow account for her that had been sitting there building up interest. I called up Jutta, I got her number, and this little German-accented old lady's voice answered. And I said, "Miss Hipp, we've found some royalties for you, and I think it's about $45,000, something like that." And there was just silence, and she said, "Oh, mein Gott." It turns out that she had kind of had a complete loss in faith in her talent. She became a seamstress in the late 50s, early 60s, never played again, and no one had ever heard from her, and she just had a few friends. You would never, ever guess that this woman used to sell out the Hickory House and play with Zoot Sims. It was really amazing. Unfortunately, she passed away just about a year and a half ago. I don't know, for a moment there, it was very sad, but then I thought at least it was somebody we found.
Most musicians, if they get anything, get far less. Once Jimmy Scott's old recordings came out on CD, his lawyer was able to get the labels that were reissuing them to commit to future royalties, but no back pay. Scott now gets periodic checks for $300 or $400, hardly enough to live on. So even as he nears the age of 80, Scott says he performs at least once a month to pay his bills.
It ain't easy, but you have to be a fighter and keep going. I love the business, so it wasn't hard for me to continue, but I have to, too.
Some stories about older jazz musicians do have happy endings. Tomorrow, we check in with Henry Grimes, who survived the jazz business by leaving it. Felix Contreras, NPR News.
Oh, wheel of fortune.
You can hear the earlier stories in this series at our website, npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.